Well, good morning. Thank you. And it is a good morning. And I think, and I hope you've already got the flavor that we are having our, what I call our second annual, because we had our first annual last year. And if the Lord doesn't come back, we'll have our third annual, a global outreach, or we call it Far Reach Weekend, and particularly Sunday. And so our focus this morning is going to be on not just here, but there. And, you know, as I've thought about Mission Sundays, and if you're like me and you've been in church for a while, you can remember some of those Mission Sunday emphasis, you know, where maybe you came away with, it wasn't all that interesting, a little boring maybe. And that's not to be offensive to missionaries. It's just sometimes that can happen. Or maybe it's exciting, like, wow, I learned about this place that I'd never heard of. And then at times, if you're like me, it might have been convicting. Where I felt like, man, there's a lot to do, and I'm not doing much. And then hopefully it's also challenging. There's an opportunity and many opportunities to be involved in what God's interested in. So the goal today is not to make you feel guilty so you can relax. Although if you do feel guilty by virtue of the Spirit, that's okay. That's a spirit thing sometimes. But that we can get a vision of missions, like what I'm hoping is that we'll get a vision of what is this thing that we call Far Reach or Global Outreach, and then also to have a challenge. And the challenge is this. I don't know how many are out there, but we're going to have two services this morning. Every one of you can do something. And that's not an exaggeration. And many of you can do more than something. And so allow yourself to be challenged and to be involved. And, you know, as I was thinking of an introduction for this sermon this morning, I thought of when I was a kid, at times my parents would let me stay up long enough, not very often, but every now and then, to watch Mission Impossible. And that was before Tom Cruise was, you know, driving motorcycles off cliffs. But it's still, and some of you probably go back and you remember that there was this guy, I think his name was Peter Graves or something, and it would start out and he would have some sort of I can't remember what it was, a box or something. He would open it up and there was this recording. And it says, Mr. Graves, over in Russia, underneath all these, you know, fortresses, they're building a bomb that's going to blow up the whole United States in 10 days. And you need to go out and stop it, and it's impossible. You can't do it, but you got to do it anyway. And the ones that I watched, I never saw them fail. It was an impossible mission, but they always did it. And it ended with that really encouraging note. You remember that really encouraging, and I don't know if that's in the new movies now or not. It said, as usual, should you or any of your IM forces be shot or be caught or killed, the secretary will disavow, man, a lot of you guys haven't seen, you got to go back and look at the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your action, like you never existed. And then it said that the tape will self-destruct in 10 seconds, and it was gone. And here's what we're going to talk about this morning, not that. We're going to talk about the true impossible mission, and that is saving the world from sin. That is impossible, and the key agent that saves the world from sin isn't you, it isn't me, but it's God. And God can do the impossible. And if we believe that, then what this whole idea of missions is God doing what is absolutely impossible if it weren't that he were God. And we get the chance to get on board with that impossible mission of saving the world. So I've got 3 points to the sermon this morning, and I know I've got a ton of material this morning, so, you know, kind of buckle your seatbelts and get ready, and I'm going to be throwing a lot of stuff out there, and I'm going to be trying to say it really quick so that I don't take forever, but I've got 3 points to the sermon. The first point is going to be this. I want to talk about what in the world is God's mission. I mean, usually when we think of mission, we think of ourselves. I've got a mission. We've got a mission. But what's God's mission? And the text I want us to look at is a parallel text to what was just read in Isaiah, which is a really neat text. And I was going to preach Isaiah, but then I thought, nah, I'm going to go with Habakkuk, because that's what you always do, you know? You think, if I'm going to preach something, I'm going to preach Habakkuk, which I remember taking me a long time to even know how to pronounce that. So if you got your Bibles, open it up to Habakkuk. And if you don't know where Habakkuk is, it's in the Old Testament. And it's a little book in the Old Testament. And in the pew, or they're not pews, chair, whatever those church Bibles are. It's on page 9 something. I looked it up and I remember the 9. I don't remember the other part. I think it's 930 something. And it's a 3-chapter book, and someday I'd love to preach a sermon on Habakkuk, and I may do that because I have before, and I love it. Let me just give you a little background, and then there's one verse we want to look at, and we want to spend most of our time this morning on this one verse that, again, is parallel to what you just heard in Isaiah. Habakkuk, as you pronounce his name, was a prophet to the southern kingdom of Judah, and he was around about 600 years before Christ. And that is an interesting time in the history of Israel and Judah, because in a very short period of time, they're going to be taken captive for what's been called the 70-year captivity, where the Babylonians come in and take them out of the land and destroy the temple. Habakkuk's one of the ones that prophesies that. And when you look at the first chapter of Habakkuk, and we're not going to take time to go through that, but let me give you a quick, there's a dialogue between Habakkuk and God. The dialogue starts out, it just reminds me of me and us. He says, hey God, just in case you don't know, things are going really bad here in Israel. We're really corrupt. I've said, hey God, in case you don't know, things are going really bad in the United States and people are really corrupt. You know, I mean, that's what he said. And God said, so, you know, it's this interaction. God says, yeah, you know what? I know, and I'm going to do something about it. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the most corrupt, the most powerful, and secular history would say the same thing. The Chaldeans or the Babylonians, they were the world power, and they're going to come in, and they were corrupt, and they were evil, and they were awful, and they were horrible, and they're going to wipe you out. They're going to destroy your temple. They're going to take you out of the land. And so Habakkuk says, oh, wait a minute, God. All right, I know I was complaining a little bit, but man, you wouldn't want to do that, would you? Come on. And that's chapter 1. Then chapter 2, in verse 2, the Lord answered me and said, write a vision. Let me show you what my vision is. And I think in essence, God is saying, let me show you what my mission is. And then when you go through chapter 2, you're going to find 5 woes. And again, we're not going to talk about them this morning, but here's what you ought to do for lunch today. You ought to read Habakkuk together, and you ought to practice pronouncing it so you get it right. And then you ought to, as you're reading it, you'll find 5 woes, and they're all issued toward Babylon. In essence, God said, Babylon's not going to get away with anything. So don't misunderstand that, but they are going to be instruments in my hand, and they're going to be instruments to judge my people. And then one of the great verses, and this isn't one we're going to talk about this morning, is in verse 4. He said, behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. That's Babylon thinks there's something, but... And verse 4 of Habakkuk 2 says, the just or the righteous shall live by faith. Paul picked that up in the New Testament in 2 of his epistles, and the author of Hebrews did as well. The just shall live by faith. That there, it appears the Babylonians are going to come in, and I'm going to use them to bring judgment. But here's what I'm doing. I am developing a group of people who live by faith. They're my people. That's who they are. And Babylon is not, because they are pursuing their own way. And then as he goes through that, verse 14 is kind of the key verse, and I hope we get verse 14 up here, because I want to belabor this. Yeah, so just leave that up there. Here's what God's mission is. God's mission is this: for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the water covers the seas. And that was virtually the same as Isaiah, except I would ask if anybody knows what word was left out of Isaiah. But the reason I think that is because it's going to be one of my main points. It's the word glory. Now, it's understood in Isaiah. This idea of the glory of the Lord is going to cover the earth. The earth is going to be filled with it like the water covers the seas. That's God's mission. What God is about is that his glory will cover the earth like the water covers the sea. And let me tell you, that's an impossible mission. Have you seen our world? I actually have a world here. It's not a literal world. There it is. This is the world. What do you think God thinks when he looks at the world? Which my wife, by the way, helped me do this, because it would have been really messy if I had done it. Well, here's the earth. This is it. So I'm going to leave this up here so you can keep that in mind. And let's look really carefully at the text. There's 5 things I want you to see about this text. There it goes. That's a moving earth. And the first one is this. Look at verse 14. For the earth. 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 Got that? Earth. You know what the earth isn't? It isn't the United States. I mean, the United States is part of the earth. It isn't Russia. It isn't Israel. It isn't, you know what it is? It's the whole thing, right? This is the earth. God's mission is to the earth, because sometimes we can become so whatever it is centric that we think it's all about us. And you know what? God is interested in us. He's concerned about us, but he's concerned about a lot more than that, like the whole earth, like the fullness of it. Hang on, earth. So the first, it's God is after the whole earth. I tried to think of some illustrations of these points, and I recently read, I saw a little blurb thing, and I used to be more into baseball than I am now, because I grew up in Baltimore, and the Baltimore Orioles used to be really good, and they made it to the playoffs this year and got wiped out in the first round, and most of you probably don't care at all about baseball, and that's fine, you don't need to, but you should know that in October is like the time when baseball gets to its final, you know, it's going to be wrapped up. Who's the winner? And we have what we call the World Series. You guys, anybody ever been to a World Series game? There you go. I have too. That's on my resume. I went to two Worlds. Never mind. But anyway, I mean, because Ben and I both think sports are a great illustration, but a lot of people don't. But at the end of the season, there's a World Series, somebody wins it, and they're called the world champion. And I read an article that said some of the Japanese, and they're pretty good baseball players over there, they said, world champion? You're just in your little part of the world. The world's a lot bigger than you. You know what? They're right. God's interested in the world. That's what his mission is. So I think it's a pretty big mission, God. You got a big mission. You must be a big God. The second is this. You see, the earth will be filled. Now, will be filled doesn't mean might be filled, could be filled. Maybe half of it will be filled. Maybe a third of it will be filled, right? It's will be filled. And again, as I was thinking of an illustration of that, I thought of grandkids and kids, you know, where they'll say, and we were out visiting them not too long ago, they'll say something like, can we get ice cream after church? And you know what the typical parent answer to that is? I know you guys can't talk Sunday morning. I mean, because I've heard you parents do it. It's like, well, we'll see, maybe, possibly, which gets interpreted after church is over. You said, we're going to get ice cream. And then the parent says, you know, it's not what I said. Here's what God said. It will be filled. Not maybe, will be. So there's this guarantee. I find that to be so encouraging. When God says, I got a mission, and I'm going to do my mission, and I'm going to fulfill my mission. And if you're going to get on board with his mission, you have that sense of God's going to fulfill what he said he was going to do. He's going to fill this earth. Which, by the way, that language is used in Genesis 1 when God created Adam and Eve. And he said to Adam and Eve, go, be fruitful, and multiply. And then the next word, and a lot of times we, because that means go have kids, and that's a good thing to do, and do it. That's what we ought to be doing. And fill the earth. And I got to think Habakkuk knew that God's initial, original plan was, I'm going to create my image, Adam and Eve, and they're going to fill the earth with Adam and Eve's, little Adam and Eve's. And they're going to be glory fillers. That was what the intent was. So first of all, his mission is the whole earth. Secondly, his mission involves, it's going to happen, he's going to fill, and he's going to fill, it'll be filled with the knowledge. That's three. Knowledge. Knowledge is not, I got more data in my head. It isn't, I learned a new attribute of God today. As a matter of fact, some of us are on Equip Night, the men are going over a book called The Knowledge of the Holy. And it's about God, who he is. And one of the key points of the knowledge of the holy is that we don't want to be people that just know more about God, but we want to be people that know God. So knowledge here is more, the earth is going to be filled with people who know God. They have a relationship with God, which is a lot better than knowing about God. It's a lot better than saying, I've got a bunch of data points, because you know what? The devil knows a lot about God. I mean, the devil could write the knowledge of the holy, and the devil's going to hell. And so what it's going to be filled up with is knowledge, which is more than just I've got this cerebral thing, but that I've got a relationship, that these are people that are rightly related to the God of the universe. These are people that are believers, would be kind of a term we would use. These are people that if you're here this morning and you don't know Jesus as your Savior, you don't know Him, even if you know the name Jesus and you know some of that kind of stuff. It's when you say, Jesus, I'm a sinner and I'm coming to you in faith and trusting in you. That's where Jesus says, I invite you. That's my mission is to make people who know me because I know them. So the earth, that's pretty big, will be filled, that's pretty extensive, with not just more head knowledge, but that relational knowledge of the glory of the Lord. Man, that's what his mission is. My glory being spread. And that idea of glory, and some of you have probably studied it out a little bit. It's used a lot in the Old Testament. I mean, just even as I was preparing for this sermon, I think I'm gonna rant and rave about glory a little bit this morning because it's worth ranting and raving about. It's the glory of the Lord. And the word glory is used all over the place in the Psalms. Matter of fact, in our prayer time this morning, we did a psalm, and it had, I don't know how many times glory was in there. It's all over the place. And glory has as its kind of root meaning weighty or heavy. And heavy doesn't mean a burden. It means it has significance. It's like, so my illustration for that, again, is a grandkid illustration. So one of my kids in their neighborhood, there's this little stream that goes through, and it's in a wooded area. And I like to take them down there just because I like it. And I figure when they were little, they liked it. As they get older, I think they have other things that they want to do. But we'd go down there, and I remember as they were little kids, one of the things kids inevitably do when they come up against water is they try to find a rock and throw it in there, right? And then it makes a splash. So when they're this size, and I'm this huge size that I am, I can pick up a bigger rock than them. Like, and I'm looking for the biggest whatever I can find so that I can show them, here's granddad, watch this. And it's like, and then it goes, and when they were little, they thought that was something. Now they're like, oh, yeah, well, we got things to do. Let's move on. But it was that idea of the significance of when something is weighty from, again, a Hebrew perspective and an ancient Near Eastern perspective. If it's heavy, it's influence, it's splash, it's huge. And that's part of the idea of glory, that when you come face to face and heart to heart with God himself, his glory comes out. And you want to have a moment of glory with God where you see the fullness of God. And there are times, I'm sure, in your life, and I know a lot of you, where you could give testimonies of, I saw God's glory. Even in some of the hardest times of life, his glory kind of pops and shines and comes out in a way that's just amazing. The parallel text, a parallel text, Isaiah and Habakkuk, They didn't live at the same time. They were about 140 years difference, but they have some. Isaiah wrote a lot more. He was one of those wordy guys. I gotta write another chapter. Habakkuk was, I got three chapters in me. That's what I'm gonna get out. And Isaiah, in his sixth chapter, he talks about seeing the Lord on a throne, high and lifted up. And I'm sure you've read that text before. If not, you ought to read it. It says, "And the train of his robe filled the temple." That word filled is used. So it's a picture Isaiah saw of God whose robe filled, meaning he was the fullness of the temple. And then it goes on, and there were seraphims, and they had wings, and they were kind of strange beings. And they cried out, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts." And then the next phrase, it's in Isaiah 6, is this: "The whole earth is full of his glory." And then the foundations shook. It's like there was this earthquake because what he envisioned, what he saw was the glory of God that filled the whole earth, and the earth kind of shook. And I heard a guy preach a sermon that really impacted my heart, and he said, here's what we ought to be praying for, that we would get a vision of God that would be a God quake, that would never make us the same, Not an earthquake, because earthquakes are pretty disconcerting, but a Godquake that comes into our lives and says, I will never be the same again because I have seen the glory of God. And again, if you're a believer, that's something you ought to be able to anticipate. And you know the reason we don't see the glory of God? Here's what Paul would say. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Sin is what falls us short of the glory of God. Repentance of sin, finding forgiveness, draws us to the glory of God. And as you see the glory of God, you don't want any other glory. It's that God quake. That's the way Isaiah would say it. So, the earth, it's pretty big, will be filled totally with the knowledge relationship of this weighty glory of the Lord as the water covers the sea. That's the fifth one. And, you know, when you're preaching, you use personal illustrations. I grew up in Maryland, which is really close to where the water covers the sea in the Atlantic Ocean. And I remember as a kid, and I still love going to the ocean. One of the reasons now I do, and I was a kid, I probably didn't think quite as much like this, but I love looking out and saying, man, that's pretty big. It's like huge. It's like there isn't a spot in the ocean that isn't covered by water. It's everywhere. And God's glory, his mission is not that I'm just going to be satisfied with a few little spots here and there. His mission is the whole earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God as the water covers the sea. And yeah, I would say amen to that is what I would say, but that's because I'm up here preaching, and yeah, and we don't do that here. Yeah, I got it. So then I asked myself this question. How's God doing? How's he doing? Is he succeeding in his mission? Has he failed? Come on, we're a Christian church. How many think God's failed? But God's, see, let me, and here, I want to try to demonstrate that, and I got to do this really quickly. I'm just going to take off this watch just as a symbolic, doesn't mean anything, I'm just taking it off. So put up that, please, if you would, that, there you go. That's the answer to the question, is God succeeding? And it's really a busy, busy thing, and I asked Mitchell if it was too busy, and he said it wasn't. He did tell me to get thicker lines, and I'm sorry, I didn't get that done. But you see, the middle there is the glory of God covering the earth. So that's a visual. You see, that means you can see it. And the left side is God's working out his glory covering the earth. It starts with creation. When God created the earth, the heavens and the earth, and then put his image there, he said, go and fill the earth. I mentioned that before. You're going to fill the earth with what? With my image, which means my glory. So they're going to be little glory people. Glory, glory, glory. And then the fall came, and that's what really did mess up. It didn't mess up God's plan. It wasn't like God said, oh, man, I didn't think, oh, now what am I going to do? Because God's plan included that, and I don't understand that fully, but I'm good with it because God's good with it. And then the next part is this Abraham, and you can't really see Abraham there, but the fact is it's not a real picture of Abraham because they didn't have iPhones back then. It's a facsimile thereof, and it's actually Abraham as he's about to offer Isaac. But you remember the promise to Abraham? The promise to Abraham, and it was in the 12th chapter, is I'm going to make of you a great nation. Your seed will be like the sand of the seashore, like the stars of the sky. And then it ends with, in you, all families of the earth will be blessed. With Abraham, it wasn't an Israel thing. It was a whole earth thing. And then we come down to what we're all so familiar with, and that's David. Can you see that, or does the thing block it a little bit? He's down there at the bottom left, and again, it's some artist's conception of David. But David, and we talked about that just last week, the Davidic covenant, that's an eternal thing. It's not just a temporal thing. It isn't just, oh, well, you'll have some guys that'll get on the throne. It's like there's going to be a forever king, son of David, that's going to rule forever. And then you go ahead 900 years, see where that arrow goes? And Jesus is the ultimate statement of the glory of God. And he came in God's glory and died. And it says, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men to me. And then he's resurrected from the dead. And man, wouldn't you like to have been there? Although, you know what happened in the resurrection. There were a lot of skeptics. Like, I don't know. Man, now that we look at it 2,000 years, it's like God's about his mission, and he's not going to fail. He's the risen Lord. He's risen from the dead. And then just a few days later, Pentecost. Remember, Pentecost was that time when they spoke in tongues, and the tongue speaking wasn't the big deal. The big deal was there were people from all over the earth, and they heard the gospel of Jesus Christ, and 3,000 came to the Lord. And you say, yeah, there you go. And Paul, who said, hey, I'm going to go around the whole world. I want to go where the name of God is, or Christ, has never been mentioned. I want to get to Spain. He didn't quite make it to Spain, but he did. And now the church, and we read the commission that God gave to his apostles that then comes to the church. That's us. That's we. We're sitting here looking up. God's mission is that the knowledge of the glory of God will cover the earth, will fill the earth like the water covers the seas. That's us. We are the agents of bringing that about. Go and make disciples of all nations. That's us. And then the next major thing on God's agenda, and it's coming someday, and I don't know, my sense is it's certainly sooner today than it was yesterday, and that is his glory. The knowledge of his glory is going to fill the earth, and it's going to cover the earth like the water covers the seas. Then he's going to come back, and he's going to remove evil. That's going to be a part of it, his judgment, and then his new heaven, new earth, resurrected my body, my people. That's so here's my answer to, is God successful in his mission? And it is, absolutely. And that's what the Bible is. The Bible is a story of God's mission, which then brings us to this question, and it's point number two, and two and three are going to go fairly quickly. And that is this: what's your mission? I mean, that's God's mission, and he's fulfilling his mission. What's your mission, or my mission? And the text I want to look at really quickly is in 2 Corinthians, and it's 2 Corinthians 5. And as usual, it's in a context. 2 Corinthians 4, Paul talks about this metaphor of jars of clay. And jars of clay means, here's who we are. If you want to put a mirror up to yourself, you can say, hey, jar of clay. And that isn't supposed to be like, yeah, I'm this really significant person. It's sort of like, it's the best you can do is a jar of clay. Yeah, that is the best you can do. And God takes jars of clay, and he spreads his glory around the earth like the water covers the sea. That's what he uses. He uses jars of clay. He uses us. And here's the language that in 2 Corinthians 5, let me see if it's up there. I think it will be. Yeah, look at this. Therefore, whenever you hit a therefore, it makes me want to go back and talk about everything else before that, but we're not going to do that. Therefore, we are ambassadors. Here's your mission. God's mission is, hey, I'm God. I'm going to do the impossible. Your mission, and it isn't should you decide to accept. It's your mission by virtue of, I'm calling him my, not only God, but my Savior. Your mission is this, to be ambassadors for Christ. God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. That's what our ambassadorship is. And imploring that you would become reconciled to God. That's the gospel. What a beautiful thing. You know, when I thought of that word ambassador, another word for that, although we function pretty well with the word ambassadors, is kind of a representative of. It's kind of like somewhere around 1 o'clock this afternoon, there's going to be a gathering of 70,000 people, something like that, just down the street. And when you see that on TV or wherever you see it, there's going to be a bunch of ambassadors. And the way you can tell the ambassadors is they've got blue shirts. I see one blue shirt here, and that's a nice one. And they're going to have on it Colts or Indianapolis. And then you know what it'll be on the back? I don't even know what they have on the back anymore with the current Colt. But it used to be, it might be a Manning. And you think, is that Manning? And it isn't going to take you long to say, that's not Manning. I have one that's Johnny Unitas. And you can laugh at that, but that just goes way, way back. But Johnny Unitas was the greatest Colts quarterback ever. Maybe not. And I'm not Johnny Unitas, but I put on his shirt and I get it. And I'm excited about it because I'm an ambassador for, you know, whatever it is we're an ambassador for. And here's what we, the people of God, God's on a mission. And we want to be a part of that mission. And so we ought to, we shouldn't literally, I don't know, you could literally wear a jersey that would say Christ on the back of it. Or maybe Christian. We're to represent him. We're ambassadors for Christ. That's where our mission is. And then I ask myself the question, how are we doing? How are we doing? And I think, I would like to think that we've got work to do. And again, it's not to put a guilt trip on us, because even in leadership, we've said, how are we doing? Well, if his mission is that, and we're his ambassadors, we got work to do. As a matter of fact, I would say that we ought to all be ambassadors wherever we are. So if you're a young person and you're in school, be an ambassador for Christ at school. If you've got a job, be an ambassador for Christ at your work. If you're a homemaker or whatever we stand, we're to be an ambassador for Christ, and we're living out the appeal of the gospel to whoever it is we come in contact with. Which then brings me to the last point. And the last point is in the book of Revelation, which every last point should come out of the book of Revelation. Because after all, it is the last book of the Bible. And frankly, I do think, unfortunately, and Revelation can be a challenging book, but one of the beauties of Revelation, it does give the conclusion. You know, like, you want to know what the conclusion is? We live in a really evil world, and sometimes the wrong seems off so strong, but God Almighty is the ruler yet. And that's the message of the book of Revelation, that hang on, because God's going to bring about what he's promised. He's going to accomplish his mission. So point number three is, what is the mission? I call it the mission of the church, or what's the conclusion to the mission? And it comes from Revelation 7. And I'm aware that maybe I refer to Revelation 7 a lot, but I'm convinced of this, not enough. Revelation 7, and we're going to go down to verse 9, jumping into a context again. But the context is that there's letters to seven churches, and then there's this incredible scene of the throne where Lamb is seated on the throne as well as the King of Kings, and then there's judgments that are coming. And this text is like going to the end before you get to the end. And it says this, verse 9, after this I looked, and behold, a great multitude which no one could number, from every nation and from all tribes and peoples and languages. Here's another way of saying that. That's the whole earth. That's not just people that speak Hebrew or English. It's people that speak Urdu. And I don't even know what that is, but Nate Irwin speaks it, and it sounds kind of different to me. And other languages. It's a way of saying it's the whole earth. Here's what the conclusion is going to be, which, by the way, the church is to be made up of all ethne, all peoples that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and people and languages. They're standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes. They may not speak the same language, they may not look the same, but they got the same clothes on. And those clothes are the righteousness of Christ. They're clothed in that. And they're crying. And they have palm branches in their hands. And they're crying with a loud voice. Here's the cry. Salvation belongs. That's not how you cry, is it? You would say this. Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. Is that up there? All right, we're going to practice a little heaven. You guys ready to practice heaven? You can say yes. Thank you. Thank you. We're all going to say that together in a loud voice, like someday you're going to say it with a loud voice if you're one of God's people. All right, you ready? Are you ready? Okay, let's do it together. We're just going to do that quotation mark. Ready? Salvation. Ready? Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. That was a good first, and now we got to do a second one just to prove that we can. I mean, we can rock the courts of heaven. Ready? Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. Thank you. That was really, really good. That's what God's ultimate goal is. He's accomplishing his mission, and he does it through the church, through his people. So then I'm going to conclude with this. And I haven't said that before, but I really... Oh, actually, there's one other thing I want to do. I knew there was too much stuff in here. I've got have we accomplished that? Are we ready for every people, not tribes, nation, and language? If you could put up the map that's there. I think it's there. There it is. Here's a map that, if you've studied mission stuff at all, you would have seen a map like this. It's called the 1040 window, which means, and I think that's latitude, Yeah, so it's like in that, the red part there are people with languages and nations and tribes who have, there's a good, not all of them, but a vast majority, I think the missiologists would say less than 2% have ever heard of Jesus. That means 98% in that part of the world have never heard of Jesus. And so if we're going to get to Revelation 7, and ultimately God's going to do it, but he uses us. And here's what and I like to do it too. I like to stay in Greenwood. Greenwood is really comfortable. And it is. I mean, you know, it's kind of comfortable. And maybe I could go to the north side of Indianapolis. Not as comfortable, but you could be there for a while if you wanted. I mean, and then we could, and by the way, we should be glory sharers within Greenwood and within the north side of Indianapolis and within Indiana, but here's what is an incredible need, and it's a crying need, is that the gospel would get to North Africa, to the Middle East, to South Asia, and it's going to be the people of God. They're going to take it there, which is us. And so there's work to be done. Then, here's what my conclusion is. When you came in, I hope you got one of these that you could put on your refrigerator, but more than put it on your refrigerator, you probably ought to use it as a prayer guide. And it talks about at least some of the things that we are working on in terms of hoping that as a community, as the church, that we can do to try to start to help in that whole region and bring it about from afar the gospel of Christ. And if you look on the very back, and in it is some interesting and helpful stuff, I think. But if you look on the very back, let me give you three practical, you can do this, or at least two of the three you can do. The third one, probably everybody doesn't do, but the first two you could. First of all is prayer. Man, when I say that, I know that sounds trite, even to Christians. Okay, pray. Our desire is that we would be a church that prayer doesn't sound trite. It doesn't sound like, yeah, well, that's what you're supposed to say. That we would be diligently involved in prayer. And back in the, what do we call that, foyer? I don't know what we call it. Anyway, on the other side of those doors, there's prayer letters from the Dragons, who are members of our church that we support on a monthly basis, Mike and Pat. You can find out about them. They have prayer requests there. Then I also put a quarterly report from the mission agency that we support, and it's called FAM, For All Mankind Mission. Movement, right. I always get that. I know it's one of those M's. And as a matter of fact, we're going to be taking a trip to South Asia with this group who are impassioned about that red area and going after it. So those are two areas that you could be praying. And there's more. You probably have acquaintances. Be praying, God, keep do what you do and use us to do it. The second is giving. You know, a church ought to be a church that talks about giving. And we're talking about giving, not in the sense of we want to, and God may call us to expand and to do some things, but all of that would be with the intent of so that we have and can be more about his mission. And let me give you three areas of mission or of giving. Excuse me. The first one is Operation Christmas Child. And you saw the video of it at the beginning. That's a pretty easy one. And we don't know for sure what the results are, but I know this. Get the gospel out, and do it in a way that people will say, I want to see this. So you could do that. The second thing is we'll have a Christmas offering that's going to be coming up, believe it or not, in December. I mean, who would have thought you'd have a Christmas offering in December, where we'll give on one Sunday all that comes in, and we've decided as elders that we're going to give it to, and we're going to hear more about it in a couple weeks, that this people trafficking thing is just a horrific evil in the world. And we thought we want to have some influence there. And so that's the social side. But the spiritual side, that we found an organization that's doing some, it looks like, really good work. And then one of these in South Asia. And it's almost like, man, you get to go after not only social injustice, which to me is one of the most horrific. When I think of evil in the world, man, that rates, and I'm not God, but it's just, that's horrible. But then also what they really need is Christ. And this organization is going at both of those. So we'll be letting you know more about that. And then, I would add this too, that sometimes we forget, when you give money to the church, it does go to put lights on. And it goes to print things like this. And I'll even be honest with you, it does go to salaries, it does. But a lot of it, and we would like even more of it to go, and we already have it set where we have budgeted where a lot of it we give away. We give away local and global. And so when you're just making your regular offering, it's going toward reaching the lost for Christ. So keep doing more of that. And we're always encouraged. Our church has been a really giving church. So you can pray, you can give, and then the third is you can go. And we have three vision trips this year. The students are going on one. There is a group of us that are going to India, South Asia. And then there's also a group going to France again, or excuse me, Spain. It's right next to France. They're going to Spain, and they're going to be a camp that, see, you ought to be up here. And it's a really neat opportunity. We're going to have a call out about that in a couple of weeks. So if you're interested, those are ways to go. Let me make one other comment about going, and then I'm going to pray. And that is, our prayer is that there could be some people from our church that would sense that God is calling them. And by calling, it means that God's moving them. And they would say, I think that I ought to be using my gifts in a far-reach way. And we've had people that have done that in our church, and we would like to get behind and support that, and that just would be a really cool vision to be able to see, whether it's young people, and you know, we always think of young people, and man, wouldn't it be great if some of our young people said, yeah, that's what God wants me to do. So, one last thing in conclusion. You see this earth, and you know how the statement calls the earth. And we're going to see how this works, because this is what I like you to, you know what this is? You don't, because how could you? It looks like I'm making a meal, which I'm not. I'm making a mess is what I'm doing. This represents the glory of God, right? So you ready for this? Ready. Wait a minute, let me move this out of the way. Ready, set, go. I've always wanted to do this illustration because I love the picture that the glory of God covers the earth like the water covers the sea. And I'd like you to go away from here and say, that's God's mission. What am I going to do? So you ready? Let me do it right-handed because that way I'm less likely to destroy it. Here's what God's doing. His glory is covering the earth. See how that works? Like the water covers the sea. That's what he's after. That's what his mission is. It worked. But the purpose of the visual aid is more that we would say he's doing that through us. And so the question is, are we willing to be a part of what his mission is? Because I can't wait for the day. And here's what the people pray in the book of Revelation. Lord, how long? And he says, hang on, and keep busy, and don't give up until I come back. So let me pray.